Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, March 4th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the red and white bullseye, or I believe now it's a Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also click on a link and download the simple PDF file of that process itself. It's a worksheet process that you can get completely free access to. Click on the link, download the file, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your App Store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope you do that soon and often because it raises comments and questions and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number, if you want to talk to us, press 1. It will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And you can also download from that same webpage a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either been stepped through that worksheet process or asked clarifying questions about the process or given powerful testimonials about how the actual use of these tools is improving their lives as well. So this year, beginning January 10th, we started working through the Way of Mastery lessons, and we're reading through them as a study. We're looking at this as a set of tools. And as we've slowly and carefully read the lessons, and I've provided commentary as I've been reading them, we've worked our way through the first four lessons several times each, or at least twice each. And yesterday's show was a summary of the first four lessons. So if you want to get caught up with an overview. Yesterday's show, which I just finished making available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, yesterday's show has the summary of the first four lessons. I had a very interesting, lengthy, detailed email from Susan Bingham today where she was asking about how it's said that when addicts use their drug of choice, the pleasure of indulging lessens with each use so that more and more of the substance is required to get the effect. And she says, assuming that addicts are getting dopamine infusions when they use and not something else. She goes on, it sounds then as if getting a rise in the dopamine level depends not only on using, but on using something new, and that it is the newness that causes the dopamine rush. When we are invited to become aware of our desires, I'm wondering if we are being invited to ultimately become hedonists. And this would certainly be a dead end. I don't think I'm understanding what the way of mastery means by desires. He says that the way of mastery talks about simple, seemingly benign desires like having a dish of ice cream. The addict appears not to be affected by those simple desires and so needs more powerful substances that affect the brain in a more dramatic way. In both cases, though, isn't the way of mastery trying to have us become aware of the need to feel joyful? And so it offers simple, achievable ways to do this. From there, the way of mastery would have us use these little joys as a way to align with the Creator, with God, with light, with love. Where perhaps the addict, though ultimately longing for God, gets totally distracted into obtaining more and more of the substance being used. Like the addict, though, we're all trying to leave our darker, sadder feelings behind. So my comments about this, the real quick, off-the-top, big highlight is this is a very intellectualized series of comments and questions. This is somebody trying to figure it out, and the way of mastery in the first lesson, right after it gives us the first axiom that says we are the ones creating our experience of life, one of the very next things it says is the way of the heart, which is what we're supposed to be learning about in that first lesson, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. The intellect, conscious logical mind, the ego, whatever you want to call it, was designed to be the very simple servant of the awakened heart. So the first comment I have about this is that there's no good solution that's going to come by trying to think through this and think about the connection between lesson four and what's going on with an addict and what's dopamine in the brain. That's not going to provide any solutions whatsoever. That's the trap of using symbols of symbols, which are words, which are symbols of symbols, which are concepts, which are, you know, umpteen levels removed from the actual experience of life and being in the flow. The next thing that comes to me to say is that when the way of mastery is asking us to engage in that process in lesson four, the target is not the images and impressions and cravings or desires or interests that pop into our mind. The target of that exercise is this very subtle energy, this tingling, this impression that we can become aware of that's giving rise to the thought, I want to have sex with 27 partners, or I want to have, you know, 5 gallons of ice cream right now, or I want to have so many coins that I can't even lift them all, even if I was, you know, the greatest bodybuilder in the world, and I had, you know, 17 years, I couldn't lift them all. I want to be so rich that no one's ever been richer. The point in those exercises is not what I come up with as a desire. The point of those exercises is to feel, to slow down, to tune into what's the vibrational field, what's the shift in my awareness, what's the tingling sensation, what's this very subtle energy that I can learn to become aware of right before it crystallizes into an image of hugging someone or driving a fancy car or eating a bowl of ice cream. So the target of the exercise is to first become aware of, then learn to tune into, then strengthen our ability to tune into it regularly and frequently, the energy that is so subtle. You might conceive of it as the energy that keeps your heart beating and your food digesting and your breath moving even when you're not thinking about it. You can think of it as the energy that's going to be moving up through the roots of the trees and the little shoots that are going to start breaking through the ground in a few weeks as the spring begins to move into fruition after the winter. Not the flower, but the energy of creation that's moving, that becomes the energy that gives rise to the sap that moves up through the trees, that pushes out as the buds of the leaves. So just to set this whole thing aside from any discussion of addiction and breaking addictive process, what lesson four is about has nothing to do with the problems that we create in our lives. Now, to talk a little bit about one of the most useful ways of thinking about and dealing with addiction that I've ever encountered, let's talk about what if, let's question, what if every substance, activity, person, behavior, drug that I become addicted to or that I use compulsively, the only reason I'm using it is because it helps me numb out from or distract from pain, or it helps me hide from myself my highest guidance, or distract me from stepping into actually doing what my highest guidance would lead me to do. Now, is this what addiction's actually about? I don't know. But I do know that it is very useful to conceptualize addiction in that way. And then instead of working on how do we help this person stop using this food, this substance, this behavior, this drug, we start working and trying to help the person dismantle the pain that they're running from, that they're trying to numb out from or hide from or end. So there's no need to step into the use of the poison or the drug or the substance or the behavior. And it has proven to me time and time again over the years to be far more useful to work with people who are stuck in an addictive process, an unhealthy process, from that perspective, to help educate them about the pain that they might be feeling. And oddly enough, the pain may be at an unconscious level. They may not be consciously aware that they are in suffering. They might think, I just like the taste of my beer. I just like the feeling I get when I'm high on marijuana. I just like, you know, the psychedelic, the spiritual growth I get when I do psychedelic mushrooms. They may not have an awareness, a conscious awareness of a pain, an emotional pain, a physical pain, etc. Now, it might be really odd for you to hear me say they might not be aware of a physical pain. But I've been doing this work long enough, almost 48 years. It'll be 48 years in June. I've been in rooms with people talking about stuff that bothers them that they wouldn't tell their husband, their wife, their lawyer, their lover, their judge, their priest, their best friend, but they'll tell me. And I'm here to tell you completely, full out, wide open, unequivocally, many people, when they make a shift and the pain they were in diminishes, only then do they become aware that they were in that much pain or in pain at all. One person I was working with recently had debilitating pain in their hip. And when we did some emotional work around that and released that trauma that was in the hip, all of a sudden the hip is feeling so good that they're literally in tears of relief. And then before the session is over, they become aware that the ankle on the other leg is not at all comfortable. But they hadn't paid any attention to the discomfort in that ankle for, you know, several weeks because the hip pain was so bad. So it's entirely possible that we have mental and emotional pain that we're unconscious of. Yeah, people understand that. But it's really possible that I have physical pain that I'm not aware of. So I'm not presenting this is the truth and you should do this. And if you work with someone with addiction, I'm just saying one of the most useful ways to conceptualize and begin to work with people that I've ever come across related to addiction is instead of asking, how can we get them to quit using this drug or behavior? How can we help them identify the pain they're in that makes them want to pick this up or that they're trying to avoid or numb out or maintain being unconscious of? So I hope you can see how that's got nothing to do with lesson four in the way of mastery. You know, the way of mastery really isn't about, you know, the way I would begin working with somebody who had an addiction problem or who was being, you know, verbally and emotionally abusive to their partner in a domestic violence situation. I wouldn't bring this set of tools into that situation. I might bring EFT tapping. I might bring Michael Rice's reality management worksheet. But what we're doing with the way of mastery is taking a much deeper dive into questioning the actual process that is fully on all the time that creates our experience of life and awakening us to a set of questions and observations that can help each of us determine how much of this am I actually creating? How much do I actually have an ability to change so that I don't feel the way I'm feeling or I don't interpret the situation in front of me the way I'm interpreting it? You know, I was with a young man earlier today. He's 22, 24 years old, somewhere in that range. And he is very, very concrete in his thinking. And he knows, because he does his research, and he knows what's right and what's wrong. And he knows how all of these people who voted for the other political party and who haven't done their research about the politics and the thousands of years of war in this country and that, he knows where he's right and they're wrong. And I wouldn't bring anything about the way of mastery into my work with him, because we're working, trying to meet him where he is, trying to just help him understand what the impact is on him when he decides he's right and everybody else is wrong, how tense it feels, how solid he feels when he's that angry, etc. I wouldn't say to this particular young man, nothing to do with his age, but I wouldn't say to him, you should read The Way of Mastery. This will help transform your life. Because he's at a point where he's having, you know, the urge to put signs up that say F you, because, you know, because of who you voted for, and to yell and scream at people. So we're working at a very different level. And the work we're doing with The Way of Mastery this year, in this very slow, methodical approach, is what I consider a deep dive into a very practical spirituality. But if I have somebody who's in the throes of, you know, debilitating chronic pain, or they're in the throes of an addictive process that's deteriorating their mental and physical functioning, I'm not going to start with The Way of Mastery. I certainly wouldn't go through recommending that they go back and listen to whatever it is, the 35 or 40 hours of shows that we've done already, just on the first four lessons. So I hope that makes some sense. I think it's one of our biggest challenges, and that's why it comes up right in the first lesson of Way of Mastery on page 5. Near the bottom of the page, it says, please understand that the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. So when we get busy trying to think about, are these dopamine receptors responsible for this? Am I going to become a hedonist if I tune into what my desires are? That's all figuring it out. That's all a trap of the mind. I remember the story, I think it came up in an Anthony DeMello book. He's one of my favorite authors. And he talks about the master who had this one student who was just absolutely obsessed with reaching enlightenment. And at one point, the master was not surprised when the student said, you know, you're not teaching me fast enough. I need to go off and do this on my own. I need to reach enlightenment, but I will send you notes and I will keep you updated and I'll let you know what I'm learning. And the master just nodded and blessed him on his way. And then, you know, every month or so he'd get a note. There'd be a messenger from some other town, and this student would write him and say, oh, I've got it. It's all in the breath. And the master would just read the note and then use it for his next fire. And then, oh, I've got it. You know, it's all about service. It's about doing works for others. Okay, and he'd read the note and throw in a fire. And month after month, he'd get all of these. And then after a while, a number of years, the notes quit coming. And the master thought, you know, that's kind of curious. And then one of the people that was normally traveling through the town came to him and said, oh, you know, I'm going by so-and-so, and one of your former students is reported to live outside of that town. And so the master said, well, you know, take him this note. And the note simply said, so, you know, What have you learned lately about enlightenment? And the note comes back to him a couple of weeks later and it says, who cares? And the master says, he's got it. What does that mean? It means he's quit intellectualizing. He's quit trying to figure it out. He's into the actual experience, and he's not investing a lot in what he thinks he can say that will show up well for his teacher, that will demonstrate to people that he knows what he knows. So that's the first and strongest answer I would give to a set of questions like that. We are never going to wrap our minds around this. And, you know, page 5 in the first lesson, at the top of the page, it says, here's the very first step in awakening. It's just to allow this thought into your mind. Nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And this work knows. Immediately then, our Western conscious logical mind is going to jump into analyzing, well, I didn't cause that guy to run into my car, and I didn't, how am I attracting this misery into my life? And so not even a full page later, it says, please, please, please pay attention. The way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. All of the thoughts that you have about this first axiom have nothing to do with the first axiom or its impact on your life. The way of the heart is not about the intellect. For indeed, the intellect, that aspect of your mind, was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be the humble, and if you will pardon the expression, the very stupid servant. Servant of what? Servant of the awakened heart. So this is not about figuring out, how does this fit with what I've learned from this teacher or that teacher, or the mechanics of addiction, or the mechanics of self-loathing, or the ideas of trauma? This is not about figuring that out. What we're doing so far in the first 4 lessons is we're being called to question, to breathe, to soften, to tune into the most subtle of energies that are giving rise to our existence, keeping our heart beating, digesting our food, keeping our breath moving, and learning to live in the question, learning to actively question, what's mine to do here? What's life, creation, the creative force, the one mind, the Christ mind, what is it trying to bring into existence through me in this present moment? What could I do to be a blessing to myself or others in this next moment? How can I serve? What is it that I might say or do that would be a blessing to my brother or sister who's in front of me, maybe wailing and screaming, maybe raging, maybe holding forth that they are the ones who have done all the right research and they know the truth about this or that, instead of me trying to be right, trying to figure it out? These first 4 lessons are calling us to a practice of openness, attunement, attuning to frequencies, allowing, embracing, surrendering, and questioning, okay, what's mine to do here? So since there aren't any hands up and we've got about 30 minutes left, I'm going to just dip a toe into the lesson 5, the keys to the kingdom. People say, you know, I want to be enlightened. I want to wake up. I want to know God. I want to have love. I want to have peace. And the way of mastery says, okay, here are 5 keys to the kingdom. Beloved friends, we come forth in this lesson So it's not no longer identifying one mind, the Christ, Jesus, Yeshua, Yeshua's friend. It's not me, I. This is we. There are, and we've talked about it in several other lessons. The book has tried to let us know there are lots and lots of people, entities, minds, energies, which will come to surround you, to lift you up. You don't travel alone. Beloved friends, we come forth in this lesson to continue the pathway which builds the structure, the highway by which you may learn to follow and therefore master the way of the heart. Again, mastery in this work has nothing to do with what your Western mind has taught you. Mastery arises from innocence, from questioning, from allowing, from embracing, from surrendering. In this work, away, W-A-Y, in life, means to have chosen from all the possibilities that one which will stand out as the way to which you are committed, the way to which you devote the whole of your attention by granting your willingness that the way be followed. Just as when you take a journey upon your earth, by making a commitment to take the journey, you begin to avail yourself of experiences that could not come to you in any other way. When you go to a university to pursue a degree, although you begin with a certain idea of what the pathway may hold or bring you, is it not true that the relationships which come along the way, the knowledge that reveals itself to you, and even the end result of accomplishing the degree, always seems to be different and much, much richer than you could ever have imagined when you began your journey? Therefore, understand well that the way of the heart requires the willingness to commit. Commitment is nothing more than a deliberate decision that something will be so. Just as with all aspects of experience you've ever known, when all of your being is involved in the willingness to make a decision, there is literally nothing that can prevent you from the accomplishment of your goal. I can hear the Western minds about manifestation and about evaluating what they have now and how long they've been on the path. And we were listening to a Guy Finley talk last night in the group, and he was chuckling, saying, "Yeah, I've got people," and I say, "Hey, when's this study going to pay off? And I've been on this path for 6 months." And he chuckles. So I can hear the Western mind when it hears something like, "Rest assured, understand well, all aspects of experience you've ever known, when all of your being is involved in the willingness to make a decision, there is literally nothing that can prevent you from the accomplishment of your goal." And I can hear the people moaning and yelling and stomping. "Ah, that's crazy. I've been trying to make $1 million for X number of years, and I've been out there trying to have a healthy relationship." And so the next paragraph tries to address that. Rest assured, whenever you believe you have not succeeded or not completed some decision that was fueled by desire, rest assured it is because you were simply not wholly, W-H-O-L-L-Y, committed. Or another possibility, you changed your mind. And when you change your mind, you literally change what you experience in the world or the solar system in which your little self spins. The way of the heart, then, does indeed require the decision of commitment. I say unto you that when you wholly commit to discovering the way of the heart, you will discover a way of being in the world that is not here. You will discover a way of walking through life in which you experience being uplifted by something that seems to be forever beyond you, yet is within you as the core and the essence of your very being. Now, and this is a sidebar. Just think about how right before I started reading this fifth lesson, I was talking about how unproductive it is to get hung up in the intellectual questioning and evaluating. This paragraph is full of those contradictions, those paradoxes, those koans. So if you stay with this, trying to make sense of this from your vocabulary and from your past, you'll get stuck, or this paragraph will be enough to derail you, so you throw the book down and run away. But just listen to this again. The way of the heart does indeed require the decision of commitment. I say unto you that when you wholly commit to discovering the way of the heart, you will discover a way of being in the world that is not here. Well, how could you be here and yet not be here? The conscious logical mind, the words in our language, fail miserably at communicating about this experience. So that's why it says we need to commit to the practices. We need to begin to question. We need to begin to observe. We need to put ourselves in a position in our experience that's radically different from what we've done up until now. And there isn't any way to say good words to make sense of this. These words are just trying to point us towards an experience that we can't understand until we go through it. It's like me trying to explain to people what it was like going to college. There's no way to explain that to somebody. And I went to college so long ago that if you went to college today, half of the things that I explain about going to college may not even apply anymore. I mean, there's a way in which the experiences we had when I was going to college are so radically different than the life experience today, just in terms of connectivity. And we didn't have, you know, any cell phones. We didn't have any internet. And so much more, in some ways, we were much more connected to the people around us, personally, intimately connected. And in other ways, we didn't have access to the volume of learning that can be done for the intellectual processing that is, now everybody walks around with a computer in their pocket that's, you know, hundreds if not thousands of times more powerful than the one computer they had in the computer lab, and they only had that my last year of college. And it was as big as, you know, a 17 by 25 room, and there was barely room to walk around in it because the computer itself was so big. So we don't have words for what this pathway is going to be like. The text says, I say unto you that when you wholly commit to discovering the way of the heart, you will discover a way of being in the world that is not here. So within our English language, that sentence makes no sense at all. The next sentence says, you will discover a way of walking through life in which you experience being uplifted by something that seems to be forever beyond you, and yet it is within you as the core and essence of your very being. What does that mean? how could it seem to be beyond me and yet be within me as the core and essence of my being? So please notice the tendency of your conscious logical mind to try to make sense of this and figure it out. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't have to. These practices, these exercises, these questions open a doorway, open you to an experience that goes beyond anything your intellectual mind can achieve, and it does it with each new heartbeat. The next paragraph reads, "Your way will not be understandable to the world." So, you know, I love this. Michael Rice has one of these older videos where he talks about, here's this tribe living out in some jungle area, and they've got no exposure of any kind of technology or machines or electricity or none. And one of their brave explorer people goes out 25, 35, 50 miles away from the edge of her village, and she sees these machines that she doesn't even know what they are. She's calling them animals in her mind, and she's, you know, hearing all this rumbling, and she goes closer and she watches, and basically what she's watching is, you know, earth movers and bulldozers, and they're mowing down the trees and they're laying out the pavement and they're creating a runway. And then all of a sudden she sees this giant silver bird, you know, land and then spit out live people and then eat more people and then fly away. So he goes through that whole talk. And here's an individual who has no way to fit anything she's seen into her comprehension except to think in terms of animals and birds. We know that she's seen bulldozers and earth movers and a jet, you know, passenger plane, etc. But she's thinking it's an animal that spits out live people and then eats live people. And the point of it is, even if she makes notes and she goes back to her village and she tries to describe what she saw as accurately she possibly can, she can't say one true thing about her experience because she doesn't have the language for it. And even if she develops a language for it, the people she's talking to won't have any comprehension of it. That's what this paragraph is saying. At the bottom of page 56, the first page of the fifth lesson, it says, when you do this work, when you usher yourself into an experience of life where you become awake to the fact that you're creating your experience of life each moment and that you need do nothing and that every negative perception you experience is a false creation, it's a distortion of the truth of life, and you learn to attune to much more subtle energies than you've ever been aware of before, as you actually do that, not just read about it the way we've been reading about it in these first four lessons, but as you begin to do that, your experience of the world will not be able to be communicated to the people around you. They won't understand it. There's parts of you that won't even understand it. This is the next line. Your way will not be understandable to the world. Your way will not even be comprehensible within yourself. You will be living from mystery, moving from mystery to mystery to mystery, uplifted and carried by something that brings a satisfaction and a fulfillment to the depth of your soul that is far, far beyond anything you can imagine. You can't imagine it. The new can't be known. There is a level, there is a way to exist, there is a way to experience life that goes light years beyond anything that you've been taught by the culture you were raised in, by the traumas of the family that you inherited, by any approach to life that has you focusing more on the physical and the five senses than the things that give rise to the five senses. So, how do I decide if I want to make a commitment? Because it says here, backing up a couple paragraphs, the way of the heart then does indeed require the decision of commitment. Well, tell me, is it worth it? Should I do that? Yeah, but when you do it, you'll discover a way of being here in the world that's not here. What do you mean by that? Well, you'll discover a way of walking through life in which you experience being uplifted by something that will seem forever beyond you. Yet the truth of it is that it's in the core of you and the very essence of your being. Well, how could it be in the core of me and then seem like it's beyond me? What are you talking about? Well, when you make this commitment and you get on this pathway and you usher yourself into new experiences of life and yourself and the world around you, you won't be able to understand it. The people around you won't be able to understand what you're living and experiencing, and you won't be able to comprehend it. Huh? Yeah. You're going to end up moving from one mystery to another. You're going to be dumbfounded. You're going to find life experiences that you've got no words for and no way to communicate to the people around you. You're going to move from mystery to mystery to mystery, and you're going to feel uplifted and carried by something that brings a satisfaction and a fulfillment to the depth of your soul that you're not going to be able to talk about because it goes beyond anything you can imagine. And if it goes beyond anything you can imagine, that means you're not going to have any language for it. Well, then why would I do this? Is it worth it? Next paragraph. Is it worth it to commit to the way of the heart? One word with exclamation point following it. Yes. Yes, because it culminates with the recognition that you do not live life with a capital L at all, but rather life with a capital L is living you. One of its characteristics is the development of the witness, a quality of consciousness, a way of being in which you seem to be witnessing everything that arises and flows through you and around you, but you're witnessing it from a place of utter stillness. Western mind. Stillness? You mean I have to sit like a bump on a log? Stillness? You mean I shouldn't be doing something when I see that child getting, smacked around by an adult, an angry adult in a store? Stillness? What is that? This is crazy. Next paragraph. Stillness does not mean non-activity. It does mean non-attachment to activity, whether it be the arising and falling away of the cancer in the body, the arising and falling away of a relationship, or the arising and falling away of a solar system. You will discover that there is a place within you that can look upon all things with perfect equanimity, perfect acceptance, and perfect love. For in mastery, the way of the heart, and mastery of the way of the heart, you will discover that nothing is unacceptable to you. Only what is accepted can be transcended. You will discover a way of being in which nothing any longer compels you. Not even the desire to know God compels you any longer. For the need of it will have been completed. They alluded to this in a previous lesson where it said, you will need to give up being a seeker. You will need to move into the position of being one who has found. If I have found, I'm no longer seeking. You will discover a way of being in which nothing any longer compels you. Not even the desire to know God compels you any longer, for the need of it has been completed. Earlier, they made a reference to this. Do this process of clearing up your false perceptions. Do it over and over and over again. And when you do, you will be in constant, active, conscious awareness of your connection to all of creation. The way they said that in a previous lesson was, for it is indeed the forgiven who know their God. It is indeed the person who has removed all of the false perceptions from their consciousness that is directly able to see, feel, and live from the awareness that they're connected to everything and everything is connected to them, that they were never separate from anyone or anything, including their creator. When I have removed every false perception from my mind-body-energy system, from my bloodline, that's going to be my experience. I will no longer need to know God. A number of years ago, it came to me to say, and it was probably from, you know, multiple repetitions of reading this book, but it came to me to say probably five or more years ago now, only the ego wants to know God. Now just think about that for a minute. Only your ego wants to know God. How could that be? Well, because your soul, capital S, soul, is in awareness, is in constant conscious awareness of its connection to its creator. So it's not running around trying to know God. So to repeat that last little sentence or two, you will discover a way of being in which nothing any longer compels you. Not even the desire to know God compels you any longer, for the need of it will have been completed. Then there arises a way of being in the world that is indeed not here. For you will feel no restlessness, no need to direct your journey. No questions will arise. You will be at peace. In that peace, the breath of the Creator will move through you, and you will become as the wind, knowing not where you came from or where you are going, but you will abide in perfect trust and perfect rest. The world may not know you, but your Creator will know you, and you will know your Creator. In the way of the heart, the most primary and fundamental perception that seems to fuel ordinary human consciousness has been finally transcended. I'm going to repeat that sentence. In the way of the heart, the most primary and fundamental perception that seems to fuel ordinary human consciousness has finally been transcended. Michael Rice likes to say, the trance that has you hallucinating or believing in illusions, the trance will be ended. You'll be awake. You'll be directly aware of life itself, accurately. Actuality rather than reality as a false perception created in the mind. The next sentence reads, the perception of a separate maker and doer has been dissolved. And once again, you will understand the depth and the profundity of the simple terms in this following sentence, quote, of myself, I do nothing. But through me, creation does all things. Close quotes. To rest in such a perception means that you have come to realize that the little s self that you are is merely a conduit through which mystery lives itself, through which love, capital L love, pours forth. You will realize that there is nothing to be gained or lost in this world. you will know what it means to recognize that you literally have nowhere to go and nothing to achieve. You will become empty and spacious. And again, the Western mind. What? We're supposed to sit around as couch potatoes? We're just supposed to sit on our meditation pillows and chant mantras? The very next sentence addresses it. And yet, paradoxically, while the body lasts, you will appear to be as everyone else. You will rise in the morning and brush your teeth. When the body is hungry, you will feed it. You will laugh with your friends. You will yawn when the body's a bit tired. And yet through it all, there will be a quality of awareness called the witness that is simply watching it all, waiting to be moved by the wind of capital S spirit. Though others may not see it, virtually everything you utter will carry the sound of truth. You will not know how spirit will work through you, nor will you care. Because you see, when there is no maker or doer or director, it will not matter to you. That is what it means to live as the wind. For the wind does not concern itself with where it has been or where it is going. It is moved by some mysterious source that cannot be located at all. Yet it blows. And as it blows, its effect is experienced. So that's the first two pages of Lesson 5 of The Way of Mastery. And we'll stop there because we are all but out of time for today's show. Thank you all for being along for the ride. I hope you have a wonderful joy-filled weekend. I frequently try to remind my patients to choose joy, choose life, choose love, choose joy. And we'll pick up again on Monday, either reviewing what we did today or moving on into Lesson 5, which is one of the core lessons, which sounds really weird to say. That's the Western conscious logical mind dividing things up, because it really, this book is like a fractal. They all fit together and feed each other, but we will pick this up on Monday. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a really good weekend.
Thanks. Hope you do as well. Blessings.
Thank you. Uh-huh. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, March the 4th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a minute to get dialed in. And I will invite everybody to go to our website. And if you scroll down to events or you click on schedule, either one, you'll see a new link that says Global Online Book Club. I announced this yesterday morning in a newsletter that I sent out yesterday. If you're not on our mailing list, if you did not get that newsletter, then you need to join our mailing list so that you get all of our up-to-date news. You can pick up the old archived newsletters out there on our website as well. But anyway, I had announced we were invited to participate. It's a global book club. Yinka has been doing this book club for 4 years. And she said it's not just like any other book club, and I'm actually reading what she wrote, and I've got this on our website. She said they come together 6 times a week to put into practice the teaching of the books that they read. And I think that's, you know, she does like maybe a morning and an evening class 3 days a week. I'm not absolutely sure we will get that information. But she says she came across and read the Why Is This Happening to Me Again and decided to add it to the club reading. And so they started on this last night. They actually started by showing the PowerPoint presentation. And I'll put links to both of these in the notes for today. But they started with the PowerPoint presentation that Bill Constantino did for us. And then they started kind of going chapter by chapter. She gave a highlight of what each chapter title was and kind of what it was about, and then invited Michael and I to talk. I went into a different room than Michael was in. They separate out in Zoom. I'm not real familiar with how that works, but I made a really nice connection out there in the other room, and Michael, it sounds like he really tapped in. She wrote an email to him, and he shared it with me, just saying how awesome it was to have the author of the book there and how much everybody got out of it, and invited us to participate again. And they're actually going to go through the worksheet, and they wanted Michael to participate in directing them through that worksheet. She asked for support. She said, you know, that she knows that it makes a big change, but she's not sure she understands it enough to explain how to do the worksheet herself. And so she asked for that assistance. And so I think that's pretty awesome. And that'll be something that we may participate in once or twice a month as they're going through the book. I'm not sure at what pace they'll go through. Starts at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. She's over in the U.K. There's people from all over the globe. The lady that I was talking to last night was from Ireland. And it's 8:30 p.m. their time. And I had to leave after about an hour and a half or hour and 45 minutes because I needed to get Aria ready to go home. And I think Michael stayed on there for about 3 hours. So it was just a tremendous reception, and everybody was just so ready and absorbing it. And Michael, you have joined us now, so I'll let you continue. I was just telling about the book club and where the link is on our website now, and that we will add information as we know what days and times and things like that.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. This young lady's been running book clubs out of her office in England for about 4 years now, and it was kind of fun that she had just gotten the book. I haven't asked her how she came in touch with it, but she'd gotten it, and it made such a shift in her life that for the first time in 4 years of running the book club, she's like, I'm going to see if we can get the author to participate. So it was fun to be part of that, and very excited crowd, just very receptive. It's interesting. It's the level of receptivity that I saw when I was out in Los Angeles and Las Vegas last week was monumental. And it was like a new level of receptivity. And then this book club last night was just right up there on par with it. So, you know, maybe there's a shift of some kind, you know, maybe something else that I've handled in my own field that opens space up. But anyway, it was definitely a very excited group, and just so ready for support, so ready to hear the tools. And a couple of people shared that, you know, just we talked about, you know, here I am all by myself. It's like, well, no, we've got 40-some people on this call, and everybody's here. We talked, you know, the woman who's running it did a summary of each of the chapters, just brief. And one of the chapters, of course, is on being the presence of love, and so we stopped and did a meditation on that. And as I pointed out, that, you know, here's and time and space don't mean anything to energy, so here's a whole group of people that are just focusing and extending love to you right now. And this woman just like took a breath, opened up, and got it. There's another woman who was whose mother was in the Holocaust and had family members die, and she was in this just a heavy place. And she softened and opened and grinned and smiled. She just like made this shift. So ready. So it was pretty cool, pretty sweet. So what a privilege. What a privilege. So we're moving in the direction of critical mass, getting enough people through the gate of living as human beings to literally make a shift in the whole planet. So, you know, there are a lot of people working in that direction, in a lot of different fields with different teachings. And so it's good to be part of that team that's delivering a new way of thinking to the planet. And the new way of thinking, of course, is the thinking of just the understanding and then the practice of realizing that whatever my mind tells me, whatever the lies are in my perceptual construct, that my pain is just the responsibility of everybody else, to just come to understand that, no, I'm responsible for this. And the fact that I'm responsible, if I choose to take that level of responsibility, I can access parts of my mind that otherwise I hide from myself. And when I access those parts, I can heal them. You know, it's just monumental. And there were a couple of folks who were really looking for complexity and making it hard, difficult. It's like, no, it's really simple. It's really simple. Here's the game. Here's the bottom line of healing. I was taught this about 30 years ago. And that is that if you are diseased in body, mind, soul, spirit, relationship, or finances, there's an energy in you that needs to be forgiven. That's all. And all you need to do is use the technology to bring that part of your mind that you want to heal, that you've been hiding from yourself, and maybe your bloodline's been hiding it for generations, and enter the practice of holding to the space of conscious active love. And when those two things meet, everything unlike love dissolves. Everything that gets exposed in that circumstance is dissolved. And of course, all of the understanding, the tools that go along with it, that you need to build vitality. You can't eat the worst junk in the world. You can't eat a ton of garbage. It's what they call food, and it actually is criminal to be calling what most of this culture serves. It's criminal to call it food because it's not food. It's mostly plastic junk. And so to realize that, you know, there are ways to build your vitality, to strengthen yourself, to be able to access those deeper things. And there's the practice of kind of a two-sided coin. There's the practice of tapping into and recognizing yourself as love and cultivating your presence as love in your physiology. And then as you strengthen that, you strengthen your vitality, then more and more of what has been hidden will begin to surface. Now, unfortunately, we made this point in last night's presentation, that's not Dr. Feelgood. I wish we could adjust this whole game so that every healing process with Dr. Feelgood was easy and you know, but unfortunately, your healing process will only be as difficult and challenging as the energetic patterns of your traumas. Now, you can take a major life trauma and with sufficient willingness be finished with it in seconds, but you can experience the energy of that major life trauma. You don't have to fall into it. You don't have to buy into it. You don't have to identify with it, but you do have to process it out. You know, if you've got a house that's filled with garbage and junk, if you want a clean house, you're going to have to handle it and clean it out. That's all. It's just, you know, really very simple. And as long as we're living in a state of resistance, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to go, well, of course I want to heal, but I don't want to deal with this. Well, you've now got conflicting goals. So the willingness to embrace whatever's there and to do what it takes to reach higher levels of vitality so that you can access those things, that you can be vitalized and move those through those things is just, you know, a key step in the process. And on the other side is more and more and more serenity, more aliveness, more joy, more creativity, more physiological pleasure. You know, physiology is designed to function on love, and when love flows through a cell, it is exciting and it's designed to be bliss. But when we start moving into hostility or fear, we can cover up the bliss. So the whole bottom line of the work is returning to our original state. And if you ever question what that state is, just remember the time when you held a newborn child. And if you don't have a newborn child story, one of the women last night's like, well, I've never had children. So let's tap in. Let me loan you my newborn child story. It was a Friday afternoon, about 3:40 in the afternoon, when we realized that my wife was in labor and getting ready to deliver our daughter. An hour later, I got to catch her. And she opened her eyes, and with a crystal clear lock on my eyes, they say a child can't focus for several days. Well, I know that's not a fact, because Krista Joy just focused. And actually, we didn't even have a name for her. But in the birthing process, it was just like really clear. She presented her name, and it was Krista Joy. And that gaze from her, that look from her, and the energy of the presence of that purity of love was just overwhelmingly powerful. Sent me into such a state. And, you know, you've heard me say many times that in order to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. I literally couldn't think a thought. There was no thinking in anything that I did or said. It was like direct transmission. And we all have a right to live there. So the idea of the work is to wake up from, you know, as the chapter in the book, Waking from the Has-Been. We got this has-been. We've got this carbon-based memory system that's filled with the memories of 1,000 generations. Now the wonderment is there, the power is there, the sweetness is there, the capabilities, the strengths, the powers are all there. Sadly, unfortunately, so are the rages and the fears and the hatreds and the vengeances. If you look at where you live each day, you know, if you were to take on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being would be extreme bliss, 1 would be pure total misery. My offering is that we're designed to live at a 10 or a 10 plus. And if we're not living at that space, then we've got work to do. And the work is a work of forgiveness. Literally, the removal of those energetic patterns that hold us back from where we are, that hold us down. So that's the objective of this work, and that's what we're here to bring forward on a global scale. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the process. And if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you have a question, if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the phone queue and we'll be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? 563-999-3581.
We have a hand up.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
541, I believe it's Celinda. You're on the air.
Yes, it is, Celinda. Good morning, and how are you, too?
Good morning. I'm rocking, doing well.
And you, Jeannie?
I'm just sitting in the chair getting an ozone treatment.
My question, yeah. I have a simple question, and that is, have you considered asking the host of this book club if this your sessions that you have with them could be added to our whyagain.org as an archive?
Yeah, I just asked. I just sent her the question. There was some discussion last night, and I didn't really quite get whether they were recording it or not. But if it's being if it was recorded, and I don't know. I mean, it was a really awesome session. I mean, the questions just came fast, and the response of everybody was just it was like the community really was connected and really working together. So I just sent a text out to her just a few minutes for a Facebook message asking if it had been recorded. If so, then we'll get it on the archives for sure. And if not, the future ones will ask that they be recorded.
Perfect.
And the people that were in attendance, she says that they have over 2,000 members, and that usually in any one session they'll have anywhere from, you know, 10 to 100 people at every session, and they may be different people, but they're from all over the world. I mean, they're not even from the same country or the same continent. It's awesome.
Beautiful. I would be very interested in checking that out. Now, I'm on the East Coast, so what time do they meet on your time so I can adjust?
3:30.
We'll
and
be
I've put
posting.
The link to it in the website.
Okay. And it'll be the same Zoom link, I assume, for every time.
I believe it is, yes. And we're talking right now about doing something. Last night we had planned to get into the worksheet, but there were so many questions that we didn't even touch the worksheet. We went for a little better than three hours. And so we're talking about doing another one either on Tuesday or Thursday. And we'll certainly be letting everybody know as soon as we get that settled.
Sweet. I'm certainly hoping
it is sweet.
Here. Yeah, I'm certainly hoping here that I can join. It's just a matter of we have a very eclectic life. And so in order to get time to be with Larry and the chores and things like that, and to balance my life out with the rest of my life, then I just need to be able to plan those things in and see how they impact the whole relationship.
Sure, I understand.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything is in its right timing, and every choice we make is the best choice in that moment. So for that moment in time, it's the ripest choice we can make. So I'm just kind of flowing along with it. I'm just appreciating what is popping in my brain cells as a result of my journey with you all. And my journey with all of my fellow soul travelers on the way, wherever they are and however they appear. And so thank you.
Delighted to be on the team, young lady.
Delighted to have you be my team. And I am
complete. All right, young lady. You have a blessed one.
You also.
Okay, take care. And we'll do a shout out to Susan Bingham. I just saw on Facebook that she has a new grandbaby in her family. Sweet little face that she posted. So Susan, if you're out there, our congratulations and accolades, and it'll be sweet to watch that one grow under your tutelage.
And Susan just pressed one, so I've got her turned on.
Well, Grandma, how many is this?
I know nothing about this baby. So this must be another Susan Bingham who had a grandchild.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh,
yeah.
I'd
love to know about it. Yeah. I don't think anybody is in line to have a baby in my immediate family, but thanks for the congratulations.
Well, maybe you can do it vicariously. Oh, that's really strange.
Goodness, I'll have to go on and that's very strange. Okay. Well, my name is pretty
funny,
so if it's just Susan Bingham, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I didn't look closely. I just saw it and I made a comment. And interesting. I'm just looking to see if I can find it. And it's already gone from my list. Oh, well, I'm only seeing one. Oh, okay. It was my mistake. It's actually another person that we know in Lansing, Michigan, Susan Beckman, who's a psychologist there that we've known for several years, and she popped in, and I didn't look carefully. So.
Okay.
Flynn Landry Beckman.
Mm.
So my mistake, but congratulations on your babies anyway. But you don't have any little ones anymore, do you?
No, they're all the youngest two are juniors in high school.
Mm.
grandbabies. So this would have been a great grandbaby, I guess. Yeah.
It's time for great to start, is it?
Yeah. We're not champing at the bit.
You're not in a rush.
No. Nobody's married of the bunch yet.
No. Well, it's kind of fun with Jeannie's dad. Of course, he's not home yet, but it's kind of fun to watch him with this great-grand and, you know, of all of his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. This is the first one that he's actually kind of lived with. You know, she's there 3 days a week. So, you know, having these bookends, one being from 0 to 3.5 and the other one now at 89, it's really fun to watch them together. So what else is exciting in your world? How do you be?
I'm well, thanks. I saw Jeannie's post a little while ago about what happened with the stuff. I don't know if you want to talk about that on here, but I did have an idea.
That's ridiculous. I'll tell you what they keep doing is, you know, it's like 6 different people, and they'll pop on and say, I'll be there by 10 o'clock. And so then I tell everybody else that pops on, I have somebody coming by 10, and then I have to write them back and say, okay, they didn't show up. Do you still want it? Yeah, I'll be there within the hour. And then they don't come up. And they did that to me for the last 2 days, and I have rearranged my afternoons to hang out here to see if they show up. And it's like, I'm not playing this cat and mouse game anymore. Forget it. It's going to the landfill.
Honey, are they doing it to you, those people? Boy,
they have. They've been doing this for 3 days, and I'm done with it. It's done. It's going to the landfill. Forget it.
Oh, no. You know what you should do, Jeannie? I have a better idea, and this really worked for us.
Okay.
On Craigslist, under free stuff. And you don't wait for anybody. You put it out on the curb. And people drive by and they pick through it, and it takes 2 hours or something, and then it's depending on where you are. My stuff disappeared immediately.
Now you do that. Because this is crazy. It's like not playing your game anymore.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Just put it out on the curb, and you know, people who want going by will pick it up.
Right.
And of course, the fact that we're kind of in a low traffic area, putting it on Craigslist is a great idea, Susan.
Well, I put it
or maybe Craigslist
and the marketplace, and there's also a couple of things like Bristol, Virginia, Tennessee flea market or yard sales or you know whatever different pages that are out on the Facebook, and so I've added it to all those local ones, and these people just keep popping up. It's like one after the other, and they're each one doing the exact same thing. So it's like, what is this? Is this a game?
Why
to see
is this
how many
happening to me again?
People... Yeah, but why do different people do the same thing? It's like, is it some kind of a Facebook game to try to see how you can string somebody along or something? I don't know. Susan said, just texted me and said her phone just dropped.
It couldn't have anything to do with the high energy wave leaving your mind when you think of
it. Well, the highest energy wave is to get it out of here before you get home on Tuesday because you're liable to think of something to use it for and keep it. And it's not going back to the shed again. It's going somewhere before Tuesday.
Okay. Oh, well. And I assume that probably with it warming up a little, are the little green sprouts coming up in the garden? Our cover crop?
Actually, no. I went back there and looked, and there's nothing green sticking up. However, it looks like there's been squirrels or rabbits or something digging holes all in it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's got little holes
everywhere. They're going after the seeds. Yeah, they're going after the seeds.
Oh, yeah.
We can feed them, too. There's lots.
Yeah. Susan says she can't get back on. It keeps kicking her off. So I don't know what's going on.
Oh,
maybe there's
strange.
An issue with the switchboard. She said just dropped and dropped again.
Ouch.
So.
Well, maybe we'd drop a note to Blog Talk and let them know that they're having a challenge. And other than that, do we have anybody else out there in the phone queue with a hand up?
Not right at the present. Somebody press one. We've got 35 minutes.
Yeah, we've got lots of time for some good conversation. So, it was interesting last night. I mean, there was a lineup of questions, and it just didn't stop. There was no intermission at all with questions. We just went from one to another to another. So I'd be willing for that to happen today on the show, so we can have dialogue.
We have a hand. We have
Great.
A hand. And it's area code 240. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Thank you so much. So good afternoon. I am Olivia, and I was actually on the call last night. So it was really,
awesome.
Really amazing. Thank you so, so much, Dr. Rice. It was really incredible to just be in that space and to witness that. To witness that. It was just incredible. So I wanted
That was a
to,
wonderful group last night, wasn't it?
It was. It really, really is such a special group. I mean, everything that you said is very accurate about the group, because I've been with the group for about 6 months now, and it's just a certain kind of connectivity that's there. And like you mentioned, it was just a space of love. So like everything that people shared was received in love and just held in love. So I think it was really powerful because of that.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100%. So
yes.
Did everything that we shared last night make sense for you, Olivia?
Yes, it did. It absolutely did. It absolutely did. And I have a related question. So you spoke about healing and then the need for sort of forgiveness, and then thinking back in terms of generations and your ancestors. And so the question that I had was, if there are certain things that maybe your ancestors have gone through or experienced, you know, what are some of the ways that you would encourage us to identify those things? So I may not know, for instance, if 6 generations back there was physical abuse or any kind of abuse that happened to my grandmother. Like, how would you advise that I identify those things in the areas that I need to heal to move forward?
Well, if you remember last night, the young lady from Scotland shared how she'd moved to this small village, and there was a pub where the farmers came to gossip and do their thing, and how she was really appalled at some of the stories they told about their children. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, she really started to let herself listen and breathe. All of a sudden, she got direct instructions. And this is in Aramaic. We're told that there's this, by definition, a feminine elemental force that does two things. It undoes the effects of our errors and tells us the truth. And where we're willing to listen, the instructions will come that simply. And, you know, kind of one of my tongue-in-cheek lines that I use all the time is that in order to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. We've got to stop listening to this mind that babbles on and on and on about anything and everything that goes. And as you quiet that and forgiveness, as you apply that Aramaic forgiveness tool, what happens is around each issue where perhaps your mind is making a lot of noise, your mind will tend to quiet down, and you'll develop this faculty of literally being able to decode those things that in the past were so covered up and so hidden that they seemed impossible to even start to figure out. And so it's really cultivating, as we spoke of last night, cultivating that space of love and the willingness to listen. And, I mean, literally, we'll get direct instructions. I can remember the first time that I was able to receive a conscious, intuitive piece of information. And it was kind of strange. It was so succinct for me. This goes back about maybe 35 years ago. And I was working with someone, and my visual field, I'm looking at them. It was kind of strange, but, you know, this is how it opened for me. And I realized that there was an energy moving over to my left that I wasn't paying any attention to. And when I just let my eyes move over to the left, all of a sudden, there was this whole different thing happening than what my eyes were seeing and feeding me.
Okay.
And it's almost difficult to describe, but it was almost like I just did this little shift with my eyes where it wasn't really a physical looking, but I looked where I hadn't been looking, and I became aware there was this whole, block of information that I wasn't paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that helps or gives you a clue, but it's really developing the skill of listening on the subtlest levels. And when the mind is making noise, pain and raging and sadness and grief, and to weaken that, to forgive that, so that this, what in the ancient teachings was called the still small voice, can be listened to.
Okay. Thank you so much. It sounds like what you're saying is that it's really, I remember even from last night that young woman that you spoke about, she just took some time to just breathe, and she kept encouraging her to just breathe, and it just came to her. So I think what you're saying is that it's incredibly powerful to give yourself that space, and you don't necessarily need to go outside of yourself to do that.
Exactly.
You don't need an external person to help you to do that work for you. You can actually do it yourself. You have the power of doing it yourself.
Exactly. The whole objective is to connect each person with their inner source, not with some outside authority, some outside power. There is no outside power that is an authority. The true authority for every person is inside of them. And, when people play the ego game of, you've got to come to me for the answers. No, the answers are inside of us. All we need to do is cultivate the ability to listen.
Okay. Got it. Thank you so much, Dr. Rice. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Absolutely delighted. Thanks for calling in, Olivia. Blessings.
Thank you. You keep listening.
All right.
And we have two hands up. So
great.
The first one is 541. You're on the air. I think this is Julie. Hello. 541.
Hello, Julie.
Hello.
How are
Hello?
You? Hello. We got
there
you.
Can you
off.
Hear me?
We got you.
No. Can you hear me?
We got you, Julie.
Hello?
You're loud and clear.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. I didn't have my earbuds in. Excuse me.
Okay. So how are you, young
That's
lady?
New,
What's on your mind?
I wanted to respond to a couple of things. First of all, I just yesterday heard of a great way to have your stuff picked up. I gather that you're getting rid of stuff. And is that correct, Jeannie?
Yes.
Yes, I've been cleaning out the shed up behind the house, and Dad kept everything. I mean, some things he even had written on it doesn't work or bad. And it's like, but he still kept it. So, just cleaning to make space.
Yeah, well, there's this group, and I think they're everywhere, these youth groups that of churches, and they go into other countries and they help build homes or bring goods for them. And they haven't been able to do it for a couple of years, understandably. And so this Presbyterian church group here is having a day a couple of days coming up where they'll come and actually pick up your stuff. Then they take it to their own huge yard sale, sell everything, and take that to these other countries where, for example, this group is building homes, two-bedroom homes, the size of a shed almost, I've heard, in Baja, Mexico, for families who have nothing. And it's a great way to move value around for somewhere where it's appreciated and needed. And so
right.
I don't know what they're doing in your area, but this is like the first month of spring, basically, and they're out there doing this. So I'm gathering my stuff together that's been waiting for a place to go. And it's a wonderful
great, good thought. Thank
season.
You.
Okay, there's that. And then there's this show that is two parts on HBO. It's two parts, and I think both parts are 2 hours. I've only seen the first part. It's called Agents of Chaos. Okay, have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, it would speak to what Jeannie's been going through with people messing with her on Craigslist. And I know that stuff comes up for you, Jeannie, and you have to be responsible for all that. But
right.
Like Michael was reminding. But it's very eye-opening if it is true. You know, you never know what's really true and what they're wanting us to believe. But they, you know, excuse me, I said it again, they. But there are those who are doing this thing of churning our minds with false realities, and they are paid to study it. And then turn it. And it's directed, this particular show that so far has zeroed in on Russia, coincidentally, and and how they study our psychology and what's important to us and all of this. They hire these younger people, a whole force of people who need jobs. And these people are waking up, the ones who've been doing this work for them, and they're saying, wait a minute, this is really bad. I think they knew it, but... You know, they're coming forth with it. So it's a mind control
game. Interesting. I have to watch for it.
Yeah, yeah. And then, Jeannie, there was one more thing I was going to say. What was it in my list to you? Let's see here. Oh, I just
well, you're thinking about that.
Thing. Yeah, I'm good.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh. No, there's nothing else on my mind. Right. I'm good. Go ahead.
I was going to say that back about 25 years ago, I did a conference, and it was a conference for people who ran centers for all around the world, healing centers. So there were people from just about every country in the world. And I can remember that there was one person in particular, and I would put him in the category of an agent of chaos. And each time, you know, doing process work, and each time we would do some processing work with someone who was agitated, someone who was angry, someone who was upset, and this person would start to open and start to breathe and move through it, this person would jump in and, like, stir the pot, and it really looked like someone who had been trained to make sure that nobody really settled into a healed space, but just kept kept stirring the pot. Mm-hmm. So I think there are people who that's their game, and, you know, everybody's got a game to play.
But, you know, it's really easy. The simple, whatever it is in math, and when we were studying for tests, if any part of it is false, the whole thing is false.
Right.
So, yep. You know, that really lines me up pretty fast.
For sure, and there's lots of falsity out there. It's definitely wake-up time.
Mm-hmm. I'm feeling pretty good, in fact, even though I've gone through some sorrow. There was this girl from the Ukraine that an interviewer was interviewing 2 days ago or maybe yesterday, and I was watching, and it really... brought me to tears. The interviewer was as compassionately as possible interviewing this younger woman of having gone through a recent explosion. And he was asking questions, and one of them was, did you lose anyone close to you? What a question. And she just broke up, you know, and all my friends. That's what she said. All my friends.
Wow.
And she was, At the end, he said, is there anything else you would like to say and have us know? And so she said, in a, again, breaking up the full raw emotion of cherish the moment, cherish the sky. Cherish the sky. And she was looking up all around like as if she's looking at the sky. And I was imagining that when she looks up at the sky, she doesn't know what's going to be coming down from it or the blast and, of light and explosions that she'll be seeing in the sky. And a simple thing like that, cherish every moment, you know, was all she could say, cherish the sky. And
yeah.
It's inspiring me to write a song. You know, so I'm writing a song about it. I don't know if,
oh, cool.
if it'll look, so I'm capturing it in a way, you know, that's what artists do, I think, you know.
Yeah, go for it, girl. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, Ringo Starr was on some late night show like Johnny Carson. I don't know why it came up on YouTube for me to watch, but it came up, so I took a look, and he was describing how he wrote the song with George Harrison called In an Octopus's Garden.
Uh-huh,
and,
right.
You know, and that whole process. I mean, anything can be a song that, you know, you just, you look for the poetry and where the depth of the message is.
Right.
You know, and you bring it through your own artistic music. You know, and give it some of the musical knowledge you have. And I know it's not easy for everybody, but, you know, anything can be a song and communicate a message. And I think
well,
that's
we'll look
what
forward to hearing you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look
yeah.
forward to hearing your writing of Look Up at the Sky.
Yeah. Cherish
that's
the
cool.
sky.
Cherish
yeah.
the sky. Yeah, nice.
And also I feel like I'm going to be
each
reaching
other.
Out to her. Yeah, that whole message of, well, I'll be your friend. I'm your friend. I hear you, and I will give you my support. And then I was also going off on, you know, the lie that we're all seeing, you know, rhymes with sky. I mean, the way it works with me is really fun. I don't know, but I was also at the piano coming up with the war song, the sounds of the war. And anyway, just letting you know that, what am I letting you know? You know, thank goodness for the growth that I've been able to experience and remember that I'm a human being and remember that others are human beings. And perhaps the song will even have something about, you know, put down your arms, Russia, be human, because we will forgive you. You know, forgiveness, the word forgiveness is not spoken or sung
well,
hardly anywhere.
I would strongly urge that we not invite anybody to forgive anybody because we're taking
well,
people pardon. Down the false path again. You
yeah,
know,
I'll have
we're,
to keep
we're in a space where we're willing to pardon and then,
mm-hmm.
and this would be a good turnabout in a song and then to bring it back to, and I realize that I'm a participant in this and it's my fear or my
mm-hmm.
rage or my guilt that I need to forgive and that we
right.
can do both sides of that equation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That reminds me, I also had a really powerful dream last night, and I think it was about war, symbolically in my mind, that I was having to go to work. I was having to go to work, and yet, I said, well, I don't want to work anymore. I'm not working. I don't have to work. I'm not going to work, you know. And not only that, if I were to work, it would be in my musical field. That's where my talents are. But they were not
right.
letting me. They were not letting me work in the with the piano and the concert hall and the anything artistic. I was just being told to work the way they wanted me to work. And I just think I was tuning in to basically the down and dirty, raw enslavement that the aftermath of war can bring, where people don't get to live those full expressions of their human life, you know, and it's just, that's what was in my psyche and what I dreamed. So another song to write.
Have you ever seen the film of Gods and Generals?
No.
Well, it's an interesting film about the Civil War of gods and generals, and it was done by Turner Broadcasting. And apparently Ted Turner is a really, you know, deeply committed Civil War buff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching that film, and I believe it was Jackson that was talking. I don't remember whether it was one of the generals or it might have even been with Lee. But anyway, their conversation was unfolding. And what he offered, what the line in the film that really got my attention is that they said, you know, and this was the South talking at that point, or at least these perceptions from Jackson. And what mm-hmm. he said was, if we lose this war, commerce and banking will take over America. And when you look at the educational commerce and banking, yes. And when you look at, you know, what runs our so-called educational system, it's all geared not to bringing in enlightened beings, not to bringing in human beings, or even supporting human life. It's designed to support commerce. You know, it's about making a buck. We have a job for you as a, you know, a good, we want to make you a good commercial servant, and here's what you do. You know, you don't stand up in class. You sit down like you're supposed to do later in life when you're working a job, and you don't go to the bathroom without asking permission, and you follow the authority. And that's the so-called educational system, which is really indoctrination, because the word educate comes to the root educare. It means to draw out, to honor the being that we're working with and bring them into expression in their own bodies and world.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting thought from that film, The Civil War.
Was that the last of the quote, Michael? Because it cut off for me. If we lose this war,
if
commerce,
we lose,
our what?
Commerce and banking are going to take over.
But it said it will take over our education. Was there a word?
It will take over America.
Oh, take over America. Okay, thank you.
And it has.
Remember that word America? If you rearrange those letters, they're not exactly true, but you could say Aramaic with those letters, America.
Yeah.
Nothing will
cool.
be all over. It's only a cover-up. So, okay, well, I will let someone else come in and have conversations.
All right, young lady.
Thank you.
All right, you have a blessed one.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So we have one more hand up, and I believe it's Celinda.
Awesome.
Possible one, you're on the air.
Gee, we haven't talked to you in so long, young lady. Welcome.
I know, and you know what? With the span of my mind, I forgot what I was going to say. So, but I think it might have been along the lines of what Julie was talking about, the age of chaos. I think people are so driven now by their fears and being on the treadmills of commerce and banking that they just are so overscheduled that they can't even meet their time commitments anymore. I know I've had that all my life from a lack of intention and awareness and also being so much in my right brain or whatever I will proceed to discover as I go grow more brain cells, and probably because of my choice. Because the whole world of commerce and banking and money were never important to me. So just to build a few compassion cells here for those of us who are running around with our heads cut off or we believe we are and have not developed the skills of priorities, I struggle with time issues all the time, so I'll just share that with you because I live in now. Larry says that you have no concept of time.
Have you looked at the Mind Goal Management worksheet?
Yes, I have. And until I can find within myself the brain cells and the understanding, the spiritual understanding of how use that without going down a white rabbit hole, I will. but it's on my agenda. It's not there at the moment.
We might take a closer look at it because it's pretty simple and straightforward. There is one slight complexity with it, and that is that, you know, there's a process that you do each morning and a process that you do each evening, and they are interdependent. So the first time you do that worksheet, you kind of have to make up a piece because wherever you start, it's predicated on you did the step before. So the starting point, you haven't done that step, so you have to, you know, you have to start in the middle then once you get the cycle going. But it's really recognizing that what drives all behavior is our goals. And most people do not control their goals. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make is that they overload themselves. Every time you set a goal, you create a stress. And people think, oh, I'm stressed because of that out there. No, I'm never stressed because of what's going on in my life. I'm stressed because of the goals I have in my mind. And that's a good thing. Stress is wonderful until you get to overwhelm with stress, until you have too many goals. You know, you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and the Greeks translate his words, and it doesn't make much sense in the English language as the Greeks translate it, but when you get to the Aramaic, it's like, oh, wow, what a piece of information. And what he says is, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. Now, the way the Greeks translate, like, what the heck does that mean? Sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. But in the Aramaic language, the word evil relates to completion or ripened. So he's saying, sufficient for the day. Only have goals for those projects that are ripe for you, that are completable today. If you can't complete a project today or a goal that you hold about a project, then you want to cancel that goal because if you want to apply forgiveness there, because every time you set a goal, it creates a stress and it uses, and stress uses resources. And so the simple in and out of that mind goal management sheet is that each night before you go to bed, you cancel all goals from the day before. And you ask to be shown any goals that you hold from any time in your life and cancel them. Because once you set a goal into the mind is going to continue to work to prompt you to achieve that goal until you either achieve it or cancel it. And so many people hold stresses from literally years and years and years and years in their lives because they've never, their goals they've never achieved and never canceled, and they wonder why they're so loaded up with stress. So start looking back and, you know, take a look. There's actually a workshop we do called Getting the Stress You Need. In that workshop, we do a meditation, and the meditation is going back and looking at, you know, your earliest relationship with mom. Were there any goals that you held for her that she never achieved? Any goals that you had toward her that you never achieved? Then cancel them. Then dad. Then self. Then, you know, your relationships, your education, your own body. You know, all kinds of places we can be carrying around goals that we don't even know are there, and we wonder why we're stressed. So that's kind of the gist of the evening part of that worksheet. And then you look at, well, what's reasonable for me to achieve tomorrow? And I frame goals for tomorrow. I don't set them. I just frame them. And I frame them so that when I go to sleep, one, I have no goals except for deep regenerative sleep. So I'm sleeping stress-free. And I'm asking Rukka for guidance on these goals that I've framed. You know, gee, I don't know how I'm going to do this, you know, particular thing that I need to do. And if I frame that goal the night before I go to sleep and ask for guidance, oftentimes I'll be shown in dreams or I'll just wake up and I'll know what to do. I'll know how to do it because dreams can be a really powerful listening time. And then the section you do, so the next morning on awakening, you look at all the goals that you framed, and there's a couple things to check off. You know, is this a goal I really want to achieve? Is this goal in harmony with my life purpose? Is this goal in harmony with love? Do I still want to do it? And you check those things off. And once you've gone through that process, then recognizing that, yes, this is something that I can reasonably do today, then I set the goal. I lock in on it. And now I have a very constructive, positive stress that will motivate me to achieve that goal. If by the time I'm ready to sleep again, or, you know, if it's 3 in the afternoon, I recognize, well, that goal was supposed to be done by 2. I didn't get around to it. I'm not going to get it done today. I want to cancel it right now because I don't need to carry. I don't need to waste my resources thinking about a goal that I was supposed to achieve at 2 o'clock and that it's now 3 and I'm not going to get it done. So I want to be aware of that. And so as you start to consciously manage goals, you manage the purpose of your mind's functioning, and it changes everything. Like, why didn't they teach us that in kindergarten?
There are 3 things have come out of that. When I worked with it for about a month. In fact, Magda even tried to help me work with it, and the simple thing. However, I didn't have enough understanding to make the connection between the forgiveness worksheet as a canceling of goals and the goals worksheet as a canceling of goals. So that's wonderful. That's good, good information. I'm just now at a place where I can do that. And there are a couple of things that happened that I'll say real quick because I know we're getting close to the end of the call. One is when you said sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof, I realize that the evil are on all of those unripe goals, the unripe goals that we can't accomplish. And another one is that, as the way of mastery is sharing, we have to get in touch with our desire. And so most of my goals were on neediness or needs. I need to do this. Or shoulds and oughts, yes, and musts.
And oftentimes those are leftover really goals from childhood.
Right, but we
often
don't recognize
they're leftover
them.
Things.
So
yes.
Right, and so I'm just on the treadmill. I might cancel the goal, but it's still there because it hasn't been canceled as an invalid goal. And right. So it's about making myself acceptable.
Yeah, it may not be an invalid goal. The goal may be one that's perfectly appropriate, but I'm not going to get it done tomorrow, so I don't need to carry it around with me. You know, it may be something I'm not planning to do until next month, and so I have a calendar, and I put it in my planner for next month. So I don't have to carry it around. I don't have to use any of my mental resources. It's kind of like a computer. You know, if I open my email program, things zip right along, work well. I open my email and my drafting program, and things move pretty well. I open my word processor, and things are starting to slow down. By the time I've opened my drawing program and my CAD program, my computer crashes because all of the resources are used up. And so the minute you recognize this goal is not achievable for me today, I want to cancel it. And when I do that, I get my resources back. I have more capability. I have more intelligence available to me to apply to the achievement of the goals that are doable in this next waking period.
Yeah. And
so I hope that helps.
I didn't realize. Yeah, it does help. And I hope what that helps me see when you said your planner for the next month, because I had misperceived that I would either schedule up for the next day. And so that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
All right, young lady. Well, we're down to the last few seconds. I'm going to say thank you, everybody, for spending this time with us, and have a blessed evening and the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.